Hey everyone, this is a weird one. I don't know if you guys remember this movie. It came out when I was a kid and I owned it on VHS, and I watched it and started to remember it and had nothing against it, but God, I don't remember a single thing about it even now, other than fantasy, voiced by, I believe, Boyd Goldberg. Is just a really stupid thing, and it just breaks into a song, which is the theme that I chose to do the interstitials with. This movie is a train wreck. It's boring, and considering what it's kind of working with, it should be interesting, but nothing about it was, and it was very short and felt much longer, so be glad that we watched it and you didn't have to. Cineprov. Cineprov has two shows in December, actually. December 7th, they're doing the Santa Claus, not the Tim Allen one, the really old, bizarre one. And then on the 21st, we're doing a bunch of Christmassy shorts. Come to both. I will be guaranteed on at least one of those shows. Also, review, rate on iTunes. We need 5-star ratings. It's the best. Follow us on Twitter, follow us on Facebook, and do all the little things that will help spread the good news of our show. Thanks, guys. You're the best.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
We're here to tell you about our podcast, The Earth Station DCU. Join us every week as we discuss the DC universe.
We talk everything DC, including comics, television, the cinematic universe, and so much more.
We look forward to bringing you some great reviews and discussions.
And don't forget,
read more comics.
Welcome to Myopia Defending Childhood. This week we talked about 1994's The Pagemaster, the reason I've decided not to renew my library card. I am host, and I guess riffer on Cineprov, Nick Hoffman, and on panel this week we have...
horror author Matthew W. Quinn. I'm awfully proud of myself.
I'm just going to go with Aaron.
Hello, this is Daniel, and my favorite library section is the erotica section.
And that comes
with,
up in this.
With Ayn Rand in it?
The erotica section? Oh, God, no. No, no, no.
Objectively, she's not sexy.
Oh.
Although her porn name would be Ayn Randy.
I hate you so much right now.
You're just jealous because I made two puns.
This is Tom Herman of the Brothers Herman and the host of the Geekly Oddcast.
Yes, and what's your podcast?
Oh, I am hosting Disremembered.
Thank you. This is November now, so it better fucking be out. Hi. Okay. This is a weird movie. Daniel, do you want to go ahead and try to give me a plot?
I'll do it.
Yeah, sure, I can try. If you want to fill in the gaps, Matt, this kid goes to a library, slips on some water, gets knocked out, and has this kooky dream where he has to find the exit with the help of, what, three books? Adventure, horror, and fantasy?
Yeah.
Matt, you want to take it from here?
And along the way, he learns to face his fears, because at the beginning of the movie, he's insufferable chicken.
That's right, boys and girls. Mental illness is just one dream sequence away from being cured.
I mean, that's what I learned. Okay, so let's kind of traipse through this movie. Am I the only one who had a background? No, you did.
Yeah, I did.
Thomas, what do you got?
So this was actually, this would be the first movie for me personally where I read the book before I saw the movie, well before I saw it. And this was the first of many major letdowns for reading the book first. This was that ultimate, like, ooh, I get to watch it in movie form, and oh, why did I do that? This was bad. This was...
Well, what happened in the book compared to the movie?
Oh, surprisingly very close. Like, he falls, he gets sent into this magical world, but the illustrations and the story just take it much better than this one does. Like, just the fact that it's in a book gives you the ability to kind of imagine more of what's happening.
So basically the book was Reading Rainbow before Reading Rainbow.
Not before Reading Rainbow.
Oh.
Yeah, Reading Rainbow is much older than you.
No, I mean, like, no, specifically, I think it's 83?
I believe 84? So, yeah.
But,
I mean, take a look. It's in a book.
With Jordy
on Wikipedia.
But no, I think, in fact, God, this is Cat in the Hat syndrome. This is taking a cute, concise book and making it into, well, I'd say feature length, but this is 75 minutes.
Yeah, this was at most probably a 75-page fully illustrated book.
It felt like a 30-minute cartoon, and then Macaulay Culkin got involved because at this point it was right after Home Alone, so anything he touched was
crap.
Well, not from a box office standpoint, although that's you're not true. Wrong, but... So it's like, okay, we better pad this out to feature length. So let's get songs in there from Babyface. Oh, and
one song.
There were two. There was one over the credits as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
I felt every minute of the 75 minutes.
All those songs reminded me of Land Before Time.
Same guy, James Horner wrote the score for both.
There were soundtrack two video and games. The songs.
I don't know.
There were two video games.
What?
Wait, for Pagemaster?
According to IMDb. Macaulay Culkin really just whored himself out here, didn't he?
You know,
well, his parents whored him out.
I was going to say, as much as an 8-year-old can, 10-year-old.
This came
out
the same year as Richie Rich.
Can whore himself
didn't
out.
Didn't Getting Even with Dad come out the same year, too?
No, it came out later. He was a bit older for Getting Even with Dad.
Nope, same year.
What?
All 94. 94 was Richie Rich, an episode of Frasier. The Pagemaster, Getting Even with Dad. It was the year after The Good Son and Nutcracker, and the year... and then I guess 92 was Home Alone 2.
Oh my God.
How old was he?
And he hasn't been in. And then 94 to 2003, he doesn't do anything.
Oh, that's because he got emancipated from his parents. His parents were true monsters.
Yeah.
He was born in 1980, so he was 14 for Pagemaster.
No. This kid was 14?
Yeah, he was 14.
I don't believe you.
He must have had some sort of hormone disorder or something, because he looks like he's 8.
Was he the one whose parents were injecting him with like things to make him not grow? Or was that the kid?
That's Gary Coleman.
No, that's Gary Coleman.
Okay, good. Thank God. This kid had enough of a mess. He now writes a song. He does song parodies of...
As the Velvet Underground, but they're about pizza.
They're about pizza. All their songs are about pizza.
He was in a short film or something. It was like a reunion movie with Marvin Harry, where he's like an Uber driver with a mullet, and Marvin Harry out of jail and are convinced he's trying to kill them.
Y'all's knowledge of Macaulay Culkin's life and career is kind of disturbing.
What's horrifying is...
I'm looking at over his shoulder here on IMDb.
I saw him at New York Comic Con about 5-6 years ago, and he was born in 80. He looks like 10-15 years older than my older brother, who was also born in 80. So,
Jesus.
That's pretty horrifying.
Oh, yeah, that's funny. Yeah, but it's not actually Marvin Harry. They couldn't get...
Joe Pesci wouldn't do it.
I'm sure Joe Pesci wouldn't do it. I'm sure Daniel Stern would, though.
Yeah,
it's not sure like he's doing a lot.
Of course.
He's a greeter at a Walmart.
Well, I just remember when Macaulay Culkin showed up on Will and Grace for like one episode, and that was supposed to be like some huge deal.
Oh my God. Joe Pesci, I just imagine, is some Buddha of like Italian actors now that people go to see, and he's like, you know, you could do better.
Yeah,
the fuck is wrong with you for taking this shitty role?
Can we tell just that we do not want to talk about this goddamn movie?
All right, fine. The kid is... His dad is Ed Begley Jr. He's trying to make his kid... In a really depressing scene, he's talking to his wife about how their kid is just... They're concerned because their kid is so afraid of everyday life that the kid is kind of a shut-in.
Well, what did we decide he was afraid of? Heights? I know he said... A couple of times, and what else was there?
What did he say? Ed Begley Jr. say it was something like he was quoting that like blood clots would happen in his leg. It's weird.
The only
stuff.
Thing I remember is Ed Begley Jr. saying, "I just want to be a good father," and that's when I started like chugging from my Foster's oil can that I had.
It's like he had his own version of Munchausen's that he put on himself.
Yeah, give some credit. At the beginning of the movie, you see him in his bedroom. He's got all these warning labels on everything, and that's showing, not telling, that he's timid.
But they tell.
Well, yeah, things kind of go downhill from there.
You can't give them credit if they do the exact opposite of what you're saying.
Exactly.
Well, things go downhill from there, but the first shot was pretty clever.
That was the third shot. This was after they were told.
You see when he gets out of bed, you see the signs all over the room.
Fine. This is not productive. But what I will say is
that is 10 minutes of a 75-minute movie.
Yeah, that's true.
There were some big voice names. There's some big names in this movie.
Yeah, there are lots of big names attached to this terrible movie.
Patrick Stewart. This was almost an ensemble piece, you know, like with how many people.
Well, there were three. I thought there were a lot more at first, but it's Patrick Stewart, Whoopi Goldberg.
Christopher Lloyd.
And Leonard Macaulay Nimoy. Culkin. Oh, yeah, Leonard that's right. Nimoy. I forgot about him. But Macaulay that's still Culkin. Like five.
What is this?
Pretty
kind
much
of Star
other
Trek
than the you mom. You knew every voice in this film.
But there's not many. Yeah, there's not many actors in this film to begin with. A lot of them just to do multiple voices.
Oh, and Pete from Goof Troop is in this movie.
Well, you looked him up.
I didn't look him up. I'm confident in your judgment there.
Yeah, the kind of gruff Pete voice. I mean, and George Hearn is in this, who no one knows, and Frank Welker's in this. I'm just looking at people
who everyone knows.
Yeah. Alfred Hitchcock. All right, but. There's nothing to say. I don't know why we went back to the plot. The kid is terrified of things.
His dad's building him a treehouse. The kid doesn't want to go up there and somehow manages to drop a bucket on his dad's head.
Yeah. He didn't want to climb up the treehouse, but his dad wanted to give him the nails, so he basically built a pulley system and accidentally drops on his dad's head.
Well, I mean, because he's not paying attention. Yeah. He didn't make it. The pulley system was there. He just decided to use it to get the bucket up there.
Yeah, it's part of the treehouse.
So anyway, this cowardly kid, because this is like the early 90s, his dad tells him to go to the store by himself and get some nails, right?
Oh, weren't those great days where you could actually go out on your own and go for walks without anybody calling Child Protective Services?
Those were the good old days.
Yep.
Well, I mean, and it's also an impossible LA neighborhood, as all LA neighborhoods seem to be. The kid goes, a storm starts up. We also have to establish that there are some real kids who are playing or jumping over a pipe, over a construction pipe.
Bike ramp.
Yeah, bike ramp over a pipe.
And the storm kicks up. He gets rained out. And so he goes into the museum after being attacked by Christopher Lloyd, who wants him to get a library card.
Yeah. He goes in the library.
Sorry, yes, a library. The Ghostbusters library, it looks like.
Yeah. With only one employee, and that's Christopher Lloyd with a Charles Dickens hairdo.
To be fair, played creepy. To be fair, him working in an LA library is probably the most realistic portion of this whole movie.
Yeah, it's kind of something. But that's it. I mean, it's a very simple plot. He gets the library card, and he's trying to get to the phone to call his parents to pick him up, which I guess is supposed to be seen as a bad thing, but it's kind of the responsible thing to do. And he gets sucked into a cartoon after he falls and cracks his head open on the bottom of a marble
floor. Yeah, how is this kid not severely concussed by the end of this movie?
Because he is.
Maybe it's like Wizard of Oz, where the whole thing is a dream sequence.
Well, even in Wizard of Oz, the adults were responsible enough to take Dorothy to bed and put a cloth on her head.
Yeah. This is all...
I love that for the early 1900s, that's the responsibility level that we established.
It was a 1930s Kansas farm. What do you expect? And she was a woman.
I think Christopher Lloyd is the page master. He did the whole thing on purpose.
No shit. You crack the code on a kid's movie. He even appears by sticking his head where the wizard's face is.
I know.
Yeah, what was up with that medieval times Sistine Chapel painting?
Buddy.
What was up with that medieval time Sistine Chapel painting on that dome?
Christopher Lloyd was bored one day.
I mean, I swear to God.
Progress Administration.
We have to talk about this impossible library. There's an entryway and a few standard stacks, and then he ends up in this rotunda that looks like the Library of Congress. This place is massive.
Like the Capitol building.
It's bigger than any state library I've been in.
Mm-hmm.
And then the books go on forever. And then when it becomes a cartoon, there's even more books. And they repeat. Apparently, the cartoonist knew exactly 20 book titles because they keep showing back up. But he has to essentially traverse through three worlds. He runs into adventure, fantasy, and horror.
Mm-hmm.
Am I the only one? Because normally what's required... Yes, I'm the only one. Who's required for animating a movie is you go do a little bit of research. And yes, I agree. He only knew like 28 books. All you have to do is go visit a library and just like write down titles. That's all you have to do.
And it's not hard. He's literally filming in a library. You could just literally take the books and then transpose them.
I really do think, and this is a problem I have with a lot of kids in movies like this, they fetishize libraries and reading like to this rather disturbing, not quite, well... Yeah, in this case, I think that that's what they were going for. But
wasn't that the section of the library you said you like to go to? You said erotica earlier.
Girl.
What's the problem with fetishizing libraries and reading? Kids don't read enough.
Grandpa, here's the problem. It's not, but that's not what the book, the takeaway of the movie is. The movie is not that the kid should read more books, it's that he should be brave. You don't read about being brave to become brave.
The second part with that is that most books, especially classic literature, they're not for children.
Yeah, that was my big problem with it, because this movie visits like the big classics. We're talking about Moby Dick, Jekyll and Hyde,
Treasure Island.
Yeah, the lofty stuff that even as a kid, when I did pick up these books because I was inspired by some cartoons, funnily enough, like The Hunchback of Notre Dame, I picked it up. You know, there was a Disney movie. I got all into it. But, you know, given my age at the time, it was a really difficult read.
The book was way different than the movie.
Much more rape.
Yes. And death. And dismemberment.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but that's kind of the point of these. Like, you know what would have been neat is if they traipsed through kids' books. The Encyclopedia Brown, the Hardy Boys.
Or young adult books.
That would have been interesting.
Or they just did what they should have done and made this extra length Reading Rainbow episode with LeVar Burton as the page master.
This would have worked well as a premise for a TV series. And then you can have a short episode like Wishbone where he does the Hound of the Baskervilles as opposed to a cutaway joke. There are 30 cutaway jokes in a 75-minute movie.
And only one of them good.
Yes.
Yeah, they get crushed by Atlas Shrugged.
Oh, that was great.
And he shrugs it off.
Although that book was way skinnier than the actual Atlas Shrugged. That was a 300-page book at most.
Fantasy apparently is over 1,500 pages long, which is something.
Oh, with that stupid pun where they turn to 1,001.
Frank Welker is the only... Frank Welker is the one having the most fun, I think. Although Patrick Stewart gives a performance, man.
He's adventure. He's this book that talks like a pirate.
All these people are rejected Disney models.
Yeah, pretty
much. I mean, he looks like a Disney pirate. He has like the stubble and the eye patch. That the joke that he lifts the eye patch comes up like six times. He has
he has both eyes and he lifts the eye patch up and then the second eye's there and it's like,
because I mean, you know, who needs depth perception, right?
It's a good joke. But you just, when you have one joke, you do it six times, right? For a kid's movie, it's a fine joke. But the problem is, again, it's one joke.
Yeah.
It's not the same joke six times. The fantasy that her wand only works kind of when it's in fantasy land, that's a funny joke. But they go back to the same thing over and over again. We're left with Frank Welker being a cartoon. Which he can do.
Well, the thing is, they waste Frank Welker. He's horror, who's like this torn book that's afraid of everything. And he's the first, like, I guess, section that they're trapped in. And it's Jekyll and Hyde. But that's like, what, 10 minutes of this movie? And then after that, he's like a nothing character?
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, he saves their lives.
But he's gone. He leaves the movie and then he washes up, remember?
Right.
And the pirate. It's not well done.
No, it's not. It's not.
They spent their money on Patrick Stewart, who just kind of dicks around.
I feel like he had like a glass of cognac sitting next to him and just had fun.
But can you imagine that? Him and Whoopi Goldberg are hanging out and Jonathan Frakes just is like, so where are you going to be this week? Well, I'm hanging out with Whoopi again. Do you guys need another book? Can we do romance? I'll be romance. He just shows up all ripped and like oiled.
How did they arrive at those particular three sections?
It must come from the book. I mean,
it comes from the book.
But being said, I don't know why the book did that either. Except for you can make an adventure story for kids. I mean, Goosebumps was huge in the early 90s and late 80s. Mm-hmm. They might have thought there are horror books for kids.
Well, they didn't reference any of the Goosebumps books in this movie, though. They had Stephen King novels that they like panned on
the
title.
The Shining.
Yeah. And The Exorcist. I know that's not Stephen King, but even so, it's like
Rosemary's Baby shows up.
Oh, that would have been a hell of a thing if they went.
Lolita, just there's Nabokov in the fantasy section, which is a joke.
Whoa, hey now.
I was going to say, that's a police joke.
Christopher Lloyd is creepy enough. That might work.
So the book was not quite Humbert level creepy.
So the book was apparently originally published in 1993.
Okay.
So this really was like, we need to turn this into a movie.
Who wrote it? Was it a big name?
Or? Todd Strasser. I have no idea.
Well, I mean, these kind of things happen. Like, I remember when there's some little kid books that I remember doing. Like, I remember when Dinotopia came out and that was everywhere. And I'm surprised there hasn't been a Dinotopia movie, actually.
You know what should be a movie by this point? Animorphs. Why is that not a movie yet?
It was a TV show.
Because the TV show was so bad.
Well, I know, but there's been a big enough distance.
They rebooted Power Rangers.
The problem is that, you know, all you have to do is one movie because she just keeps doing the same book over and over and over.
No.
Like Harry Potter.
So the book of this came out in 93, and the film came out in 94. Is that right?
Yeah, that is correct. So no, he must have had it and pitched it as a movie at the same, like was pitching it as a movie at the same time he's trying to publish it.
Oh, so this is like Arthur C. Clarke and Stanley Kubrick working together on 2001.
I was going to say Jumanji, but yeah.
Well, I was kind of thinking that maybe the very compressed time frame would account for the fact that the animation in this film is terrible.
Yeah. Illustration in the book is so amazing, but when you only have to fill 75 pages as opposed to 75,000 frames, it's a little different.
Let's get into the animation of this. The backgrounds, I think, actually look pretty decent, but the character models are just
there's no consistency.
Terrible.
Yeah. His shirt goes from red to blue to red.
Macaulay Culkin looks like he's wearing lipstick as an animated person.
Well, and little things like when they get to fantasy, they can't be bothered. So they have a music number, and they have these little things that look like they're filled with like Tesla coil lightning. And it's actually spectacular. It looks like something out of a rejected Fantasia bit. It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, that whole scene, even him holding them, the lighting, it was perfect. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. And then 5 seconds later, it all went to pot.
They called in Kubrick for the lighting, just like they did that one Bond movie.
Yeah,
but it's a shame because, like you said, the watercolor backgrounds are spectacular. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, these washed out characters that look like they wouldn't even be on Disney Afternoon. Yeah.
No, because Disney Afternoon was better. No line weight, all of it just went away. The foreshortening was horrible. Like
there'd be scenes where like characters are saying lines, but their mouths don't move.
Better animation on like the 70s Hanna-Barbera Laugh Olympics.
Yeah, because they're consistent.
Yeah,
they just have weight.
That's how we know Don Bluth was not involved in this, because Don Bluth left Disney because they did crap like this. You know, characters don't cast shadows. Little details get ignored. Hmm. So that's how we know he didn't do this.
And it wasn't Ralph Bakshi because no one was naked.
Well, I don't know. There's that scene of adventure mouth-raping fantasy in that one bit, giving that unwanted chance.
Why did that happen?
Yeah.
That didn't happen in the book.
Because Captain Picard secretly wanted Whoopi Goldberg the entire run of TNG and
didn't
get her.
Didn't they make out in TNG? Am I crazy?
What? Whoopi Goldberg was in TNG.
No, that wasn't the question.
Picard?
Oh, I don't know.
I haven't watched enough of that.
I thought Riker was the one who was...
No, he hooked up with Troy a lot.
Yes, a lot.
Let's ask Dr. Google, did Picard... No, okay, guys, you can go.
You're going to find some interesting fanfic.
Oh,
wouldn't that have
you, Quinn?
Wait. I've got a pitch. What if instead of classic literature, it was Macaulay Culkin going through fanfic?
Oh, my God. He ends up on Reddit.
Yes.
Well, if he went through my Transformers Revenge of the Fallen reboot, it probably was better than the Bay version.
That wasn't quite the fanfic I was thinking of. I think this would be the sort of thing you'd have to call Ralph Bakshi on for.
Oh. Picard tends to Guinan. Wait, let's see. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, he found something.
Oh, no, they have scenes. Apparently they did at one point when they were in the holodeck, so they're not sure if it counts or not. So nerds are debating something that shouldn't matter.
Hmm.
So
isn't that the entire internet?
I was going to say.
You wrote a fan fiction, Matt.
I wrote several.
Oh, boy.
You're the best, man. I love it.
He admits to this openly.
He's my hero, man. I've done stupid shit. I just don't talk about it. Watch me on SoundCloud.
And Michael Bay should have hired me to write the Transformers movies.
No, that would have cost money. He just recycles the thing and starts again. And John Turturro gets paid.
And he tells us that he has like another 16 on standby, and I lose the will to live.
I'm pretty sure the last one didn't make any money, so maybe not.
I think you're wrong.
It made money in China.
Yeah. Speaking of Michael Bay's Transformers, Leonard Nimoy was in those, and he was also in this as Dr. Jekyll, if I recall correctly.
He was.
He didn't seem so bad.
He was great.
No, he's fine. There's nothing wrong with the voice acting in this movie. It's the animation and the story that kills it.
That's the one horror thing they reference in this anyway, isn't it?
Well, other than the books they reference, yes, the only thing they do is Jekyll and Hyde.
In case you're curious, the last Transformers made $670 million.
I wasn't curious.
I really wasn't.
And they're making another one, which is coming out in 2019. So
you're giving me depression.
Delicious.
You're right. It's predicted to be number one in the Hasbro franchise.
The alternative is the live-action G.I. Joe movie. It's not that hard.
I don't know. I'd rather The Rock make money than anything Michael Bay touches. Mm.
So who saw this movie when they were a kid and were really into it? And then
was I into it? I don't know.
Now they like.
So wait, Matt, you said yes?
No, I remember seeing the trailer in theaters.
Okay, so half of that was
I owned this on VHS. In fact, I have the VHS in the basement.
I did not get this on VHS as a kid.
It was a gift, yeah.
I don't remember why I had it. We might have watched it as a rental beforehand. I enjoyed it as a kid, but I remembered so little. I remember the beanstalk coming out of the dragon. Yeah. We haven't even finished this movie.
No.
And we shouldn't.
No.
No.
Well, I mean, we're only in like the first act. It was like
we've
with
talked
horror.
Longer than the act has gone on. We've already 28 minutes into this thing.
All right.
This I think this was a movie you just kind of like it's 75 minutes and you just put it in the VCR and well, did stuff and you're just kids glued to it.
Like, I think we owe it to our listeners, all three of them, to try and get through the movie at this point. I'm
Daniel's
sorry, Nick.
Right. I can name you by name. Abby wouldn't listen to this one. Possibly me. That's one listener. No kidding.
That's me. You know,
Putin. Don't forget Vladimir Putin. Don't forget Vladimir Putin in Russia. Hi, Vlad.
Oh, yeah, all right, so I can do this super fast. All right, so kid, it's raining outside. He goes into the library. He slips and falls on his own wetness. And
ew. Yeah. Phrasing. Are we not doing phrasing?
We're not doing phrasing. Okay, so slips and falls. Yes, in his own wetness. Bangs his head, has this fever dream where he's suddenly surrounded by books who can talk, specifically the three again, horror, adventure, and fantasy. And in that order, he has to go through those different sections of the library in order to get out. So we go into horror, and he's, of course, scared because he's a little chicken boy. And
Dr. Jekyll offers him that martini. Well, that adventure.
Not an important plot point.
No,
we're trying
not
to plow through this right now. So we go through horror. We see Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde put forward in about, I don't know, about a 1 minute vignette kind of thing. And then they run through there. And then we move on to adventure, which is much longer, where we get a segment on Moby Dick, which was actually beautifully animated, which means they definitely could do great animation, but maybe, I don't know, just opted not to.
It was also nightmare fuel. Like that, some of the lighting was terrifying.
The demonic Captain Ahab that's all in red and black.
When he says, "There she blows." He did say that, right, in this movie? Okay.
If you do want to hit up this movie, like, fast forward to the Moby Dick section. That's one of the better sections. From there, we go on to Treasure Island, which is truly, like, abysmal in all counts. And then after that, we're in fantasy. And fantasy apparently encompasses things like...
dance routine.
Yeah. That's it has the beautiful animation again. The one song actually from the film, that little like fantasia moment where you're like, your spirit lifts. You're like, here we go. It's finally happening. No, that's again another like 30 seconds. And then we're moving into the end where there is a dragon. And that's the last big battle that Macaulay Culkin in his lipstick has to face, because his whole thing is he has to be brave before he can get out of the library.
Bravo, Aaron. Take a shot.
But that's it.
Dunzo.
I'm
That's it, yeah.
I just wish there was anything to this.
I liked the dragon, except for the translucent wings. That was lame.
It looked cheap. I mean, this is 20 years after the Bakshi Lord of the Rings, and there's no weight to these characters.
Yeah,
and Disney had already done several different iterations of dragons by this time.
Yeah. Sleeping Beauty, Black Cauldron,
Fantasia, right?
Pete's Dragon. Pete's Dragon is a good example because it's a kid's movie done on the cheap. Pete's Dragon is a very cheaply made movie. It's kind of a flop even, but that has weight.
Yeah.
Stay tuned to Disremembered. Well, we'll talk about things like Pete's Dragon and its floppiness.
You. I don't need to talk about
phrasing.
Dragon floppy.
Phrasing.
I don't know. The biggest problem with this to me, honestly, well, I guess we can start wrapping this up, is, well, he wakes up and he's supposed to learn this lesson. The storm is over. He bikes home. His parents apparently think he's dead. They're talking about going to the police because he's been gone for hours. So the idea that he's unconscious for like a few minutes is gone. He's been unconscious all day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no, he gets out of the library. It's nighttime. Like, they don't even try and hide that. He gets out.
I just love when he comes back, when he, like, wakes up and the librarian's just going over and going, "You had quite a spill there." And I'm like, did you not think to call anyone or try and give medical attention to this child?
And then he goes home, and when his parents find him, he's asleep in the clubhouse.
Oh, yeah. That's like, the big arc right there.
After you have a head injury, isn't it really bad to go to sleep? Like, also, don't they try to keep you conscious?
The clubhouse that's not finished, that needed more nails and more work to be done, he's now sleeping in. The incomplete...
With an oil lantern.
Has anybody ever seen the movie Shortcuts? Because that reminded me of Shortcuts, with the kid getting hit by the car, and he ends up well, I won't spoil it, but bad things happen when you fall asleep after you're concussed.
Well, it's a joke on Archer that, like, they knock people out, but, like, you shouldn't be unconscious because it's really bad for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe that's, maybe he doesn't really learn a life lesson. He has brain damage. It changes his personality.
That'd be a good meta thing to make if you were going back to, like, draft one of this. It's like, okay, from now on, the kid's going to hallucinate all these books, which, by the way, it also ends with him checking out, like, the three books that he had on his adventures. They're suddenly lying next to him, and they're literally just called horror and fantasy and an adventure. It's like some publisher was really lazy at some point.
And they're all very old, large books. Yeah. And to prove that you're right, this is a horrible head trauma, their cartoon shadows appear in the candlelight of the lantern, which they leave next to their kid lit in a wooden structure.
But they take his glasses. Correct.
They take his glasses.
Oh, that's fine.
Hope the kid dies.
Remember, boys and girls, all you need is severe head trauma and you won't need glasses anymore.
Oh my God. My dad just had eye surgery.
Give that concussed kid fire.
Oh, that's great.
If I ever make an album, that's going to be its title. Give that concussed kid fire.
Oh, man.
So we've already gone through the one, like, good joke where the kid gets crushed by Atlas Shrugged, but he picks the books up and shrugs it off. Was there any other, like, they tried to make a lot of jokes. What was for you the one that didn't land?
All of them?
All but one.
All right.
No, I mean, honestly, the Frank Welker is giving it his all, but, like, the fact that that horror is rather effeminate is just such a 1990s trope, man.
Yeah.
It's so stupid.
And then the movie fades out. The Adventure is like, let's end this adventure with a kiss. You hear the kissing, and Adventure is like, not from you, and Horror's laughing.
Yep, 90s homophobia right there.
I mean, that's it. It's just there's nothing that's not a cliched, silly joke.
To me, they tried to be all, like, literary, make a bunch of random literary references, like when Horror gets tied up by the Lilliputians from Gulliver's Travels. That's not an adventure book.
Okay, so there is a series I recommend that all the listeners read, and it's Jasper Ford's Thursday Next series, where the main character can actually go into the world of books and has all of these literary references. But the big key difference between the two is that's a book series written for adults who's had a chance to read all of these classics and want to read these things, as opposed to children who haven't read any of these things. So you're basically, you have all of these references and jokes that are meant for the parents who, trust me, were not paying attention to this movie.
I would have loved a scene in The Pagemaster where, if they're doing Gulliver's Travels, where Macaulay Culkin meets the scientist trying to turn excrement back into food.
Yeah. I mean, but, like, this is not a movie where parents are watching it with their kids. This is literally just take this and go away. Because there's nothing. There's not even anything lighthearted.
Mommy's got to do her shopping. You get in there.
Mommy's got to sleep off a hangover. That's what they're doing.
Did it even succeed at that point? I mean, Little Biscuit seemed more interested in her blocks than the movie.
Well, to be fair, she's 11 months old at this point. Yeah. But no, I mean, this is for, like, no. You know what you should read? League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Oh, yeah.
That's all it is. They're all literary characters. They're in a different world.
But you don't need to know their backstory, really.
Like, it makes references to them. And it's great. They fight people like Moriarty and Jekyll and Hyde and the Invisible Man. Like, that's what it's good at. And the books don't have Tom Sawyer, which is really for the best.
He would have fit in there, and they don't have Dorian Gray either. He would have fit in there.
I mean, considering the later books that Mark Twain wrote on Tom Sawyer, there was no problem with Tom Sawyer being in League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, the movie.
Oh, yeah. No, but they didn't need to add him.
No, they
didn't. Have you read the later League of Extraordinary Gentlemen comics?
I read the 1960-something one. You're talking about those, the different decade ones?
Yeah, like the decade ones. Those are fun, although those got really weird, too.
Yeah. We should wrap this up. I think all of us aren't going to recommend this.
Can I just introduce one more thing before we wrap up?
Oh, please.
We haven't talked about what the Pagemaster actually is yet, and that is an actual character in this movie.
He is a bad model of the sorcerer from Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Yes, he is.
Voiced by Christopher Lloyd, who is holding a scroll instead of a walking stick.
And he's got leaves, like book pages for a beard.
Yeah. And that's it. We're good.
Yeah. He's Glinda the Good Witch, because at the end he's like, well, if I had just brought him here, then he wouldn't have learned about himself. It's like, God damn it, man. You're responsible for this movie.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. You're reminding us that, first of all, you have no control over this fantasy plane. Second of all, that you're really Christopher Lloyd. And third, there's no point to any of this. The kid didn't learn any of it.
No.
He did. He just picked up a sword. The animation got shitty, and somehow he failed anyway.
So wait, you're telling me that the animation got shitty after he picked up the sword? Because I thought it had been going on for a while at that point.
Oh, it gets worse. They take all of his bones away, and he turns into like some sort of weird, melty blur.
And apparently going down the dragon's throat, the world gets bigger inside the dragon. Because the size of
the dragon's
stomach,
a TARDIS.
Yeah.
And then he finds Fairy's wand, which had been swallowed, and getting swallowed. And then he opens Jack and the Beanstalk, which was a book, apparently.
Yeah, apparently.
Written by Cronenberg.
I would totally read that.
Cronenberg's
Jack and the Beanstalk.
Ooh, it's a pop-up book.
You don't want what's popping out.
And we're done. Good night, ladies and gentlemen.
Good night, everybody.
Mm, God damn, that was funny. I said about my own joke. Thank you.
I'll be here all week.
Literally, try the meatloaf.
Final thoughts? Anyone?
No.
If you really want your kid to like get introduced to classic literature, and I think we brought this up, go read those like great illustrated classics. I'm not sure if they're still in print.
They're still in print. Oh, or your library's got
to have. Time Life things. Like they're the kind you give away at like for nothing.
Okay, well go find those, and maybe you'll introduce your kid. If you want to watch an actual good movie that's kind of like this, watch Time Bandits. Otherwise,
watch early Simpsons episode. They're all ripping off other movies. Actually, what I was gonna say too is. Actually, it's long gone. Matt, what were you going to say? Did you like this?
I didn't dislike it to the degree you guys did, but it's just mediocre. So, I mean, why bother?
Aaron?
Life's too short.
I didn't bother to see this as a kid, and I wish I hadn't as an adult.
Oh, that's going on the back of the box right there for future releases.
I don't know why this bothers me so much, this movie. It's not the worst one we've done. Maybe it's just the most disappointing because, like, I know, for example, Daniel really hated Ferngully. The rest of us were a little bit more nonplussed on it. But it's just that movie seems like it's at least trying for something.
That's true. I will give it that.
This movie doesn't feel like it's even attempting anything. It's just such a wet fart of everything it's doing. You know?
I felt like the writer probably slapped this together 2 hours before it was due.
And if the timelines that we're coming together with work out, it really was. He's making this book and they're expanding it into a movie and the animation is coming along as it goes and they attach Macaulay Culkin because he's huge.
Because they had to, to get this an animated film up and running, it has to go like from the start.
Well,
like,
the
year is a pretty like fast turnaround for an animated movie of this length.
If I recall the Tribune correctly, when I looked it up, this was in production for like 3.5 years.
Who knows, man? Yeah. Like this is all. You know what you should watch instead, kids? If you haven't want to see the classics, look up Wishbone. Like honestly,
series is the best.
And they do justice to the show.
Yeah.
Like really, like they'll do Romeo and Juliet in a 45-minute episode. You feel like you get it, and then you want to read it. This made me like not interested in any of these stories, especially something like Treasure Island, which there are 1,000 versions of, starring children, and it's so.
Go watch Treasure Planet. We've done Muppet Treasure Island, have we not?
We have. We've done, and we could do Treasure Planet. And even like the old Disney version, which is a 1960s Disney movie, so it's boring as shit.
Stuff happens.
Yeah.
And in case you're curious, his name is Jim Cummings. That's the guy who does the voice of Pete, and he's the voice of
everything. Oh, yes.
Is he the voice of Tigger as well?
Yep. He's the voice of Winnie the Pooh.
And he's the voice of everything Disney. And so I guess they just took a truckload of money up to him. He's 64 years old, and he was in everything from the line. He's in as many things as Frank Welker.
So. He's still alive.
Yeah, he's 54.
He was Cat and Cat Dog, if I recall correctly, as well.
He was George and Curious George. Mr. Quint,
not much
Jumpy
that.
Squirrel.
Oh, Jumpy Squirrel! There you go.
George actually talked.
What?
No, he goes ooh, but you need.
That's like Frank Welker and the dogs. There's so many dogs that are voiced by Frank Welker because he does the barks.
Yeah,
he was the scientist in Fallout 4. I mean, Jesus Christ. However, we are out of time.
Thank God.
I know. So tune in next week. I'll give you a hint. This is everyone next. Week when you tune in, we're going to watch everyone's favorite Kurt Russell and John Carpenter sequel. So tune in next week and every future week as we put another bit of your past on trial. Thanks, guys. Whatever you wish.
Why Hope You Defend Your Childhood is a member of the ESO Network and produced by Dude Letter Podcasting. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman. It is edited by Nick Hoffman and Candace Burns. The theme song is Caroline by The Serenaders, and their music is available on Amazon. Please rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast. And tune in next week when we put another little piece of your past on trial. Thanks!